mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, will there be a government shutdown? Could a repeal of the CHIPS Act threaten Ohio's high-tech economy? Will Congress eliminate the Department of Education? Representative Bob Latta will join us to discuss the overwhelming whirlwind of issues currently swirling around Washington. Also this morning, a new report from the Partnership for Safe Medicines is sounding the alarm about the dangers of fake weight loss drugs, knockoffs of those GLP-1 injectables that are very popular and very expensive. And the spring sausage sale to benefit the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce Agribusiness Committee Scholarship Fund is now underway. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, March 12th, 2025. California has some of the happiest people in the country. This is a cheerful story, or it should be a cheerful story to start off your day. But as it turns out, for us here in the Buckeye State, it really is not. New WalletHub study compared 182 of America's largest cities across numerous categories to gauge overall happiness. And some of those categories would include income and employment. You're certainly happy if you have a job and it pays well. Community and environment, emotional and physical well-being, life expectancy and divorce rates, and kind neighbors are also factors. I don't know how they measure kindness of neighbors, but somehow they came up with a formula for doing that. I love WalletHub studies because they look at so many different things when they compile these lists. So there is some meat on the bone here. Fremont, California took the top spot as the happiest city in the country. According to the report, Fremont has the highest share of households with an income above $75,000. But then again, it is in California, so it kind of has to. Also has the lowest separation and divorce rate in the country. So, you know, obviously, that contributes to the overall happiness factor. After Fremont comes San Jose and Irvine, giving California a sweep of the top three places on the list. Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Overland Park, Kansas round out the top five. Here's the bad news. Cleveland was at the very bottom of the list. Number 182 out of 182, Cleveland, the least happy city in the country, according to WalletHub's list. Cleveland even less happy than Detroit, which was next to last, and Memphis, which was next. So the bottom three, Memphis, Detroit, and Cleveland at the very bottom. Ohio, in fact, did not fare well at all. At all. Toledo was near the bottom of the list at number 177 out of 182. Akron wasn't much better at number 169. Cincinnati was 154th. And Columbus was the highest-ranking Ohio city on the list, but only managed to land at number 123. So, apparently, we in Ohio not very happy. I don't know why. I'm a happy guy. Are you happy? I'm happy. Maybe they just didn't go far enough. Maybe if they'd have gone further than 182, we would have found... Well, although I don't know. I mean, if we didn't make number 182, would we have, you know, they'd have included other cities in the list. I don't know if we'd done any better. But, yeah, Ohio, according to their list, according to their factors, doesn't rank very... So let's change that this morning. Let's start with a bright, happy attitude and change that. Let's be happy today. Let's make that our goal. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Maybe this is why we are not happy. According to a new Talker Research survey of 2,000 Americans, one quarter of adults, one in four, are burnt out before they turn 30. Well, that doesn't sound very happy, does it? Gen Z and millennial adults say they are the most stressed at age 25. The average respondent in the survey, all generations considered, experienced peak burnout at the age of 42. So you Gen Zers and millennials who are stressed out at age 25, just wait until you get to age 42. That's the way I read that. 30% of all of those in the survey say finances were the top factor. It is fascinating and a little concerning to see how younger Americans are experiencing peak stress earlier than ever before, according to psychologist Ihab Yusuf from commissioned this survey. Mentalic commissioned the survey from Talker Research. Young Americans feeling pressure from every direction, career, finances, relationships, even social media expectations. 72% of participants suspect being an adult will only become more challenging in the years to come. In other words, adulting is hard and it's getting harder. That's what the survey tells us here. So that's not very happy. I'm sorry. I wanted to focus on happy things, and that's not very happy, is it? Okay. Let's see. This also, I guess, is not really a happy notion either. I thought it was kind of interesting, though. Spring cleaning time right around the corner, right? You get into the warmer weather, it's time to refresh your surroundings, your spring cleaning and all of that. Which household chore do you hate the most? This is a survey by Yelp. And according to their results, the household chore that we hate the most, cleaning the carpet. It comes out on the top or bottom, depending on how you look at it. Cleaning the carpet. As a matter of fact, we hate cleaning the carpet even more than cleaning the gutters. I don't know. Cleaning the gutters, that not much could top that. I get, you know, cleaning the carpet can be a pain, but gutter cleaning, window washing is right up there as well. General home organization, which is kind of a catch-all, but that was next on the list. And mowing the lawn round out the top five most hated tasks. The rest of the top 10, upholstery cleaning, unclogging the drain, junk removal, anything to do with grout, and cleaning the attic. Finish out the list. And I look at that second five, and I'm thinking a lot of those are jobs that we don't even consider doing unless we absolutely have to. I mean, honestly, when was the last time you cleaned out your attic or cleaned your upholstery? Yeah, we just don't. Those are so hated that we just don't do them unless we absolutely have to. So anyway, Yelp commissioned the survey and they pointed out that they can help you while they can't do your chores for you. They can help point you in the direction of local businesses that can, if you absolutely need it. So that was the reason they commissioned the survey. It was kind of interesting. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Remember, the other day we were mentioning the eclipse, the lunar eclipse that is coming. That is tomorrow night into Friday morning. And I've got some more details here in case you are interested in this. It's not as exciting as the solar eclipse from last year, but it's still pretty cool. The total lunar eclipse will appear in the night sky Thursday night into Friday morning. Overall, the eclipse will span between 11:57 p.m. Thursday night, so just before midnight, until 6 a.m. So it's the overnight hours. And totality will begin at 2:26 a.m. and end around 3:31. So unlike the solar eclipse where you had like 4 minutes, which was cool, but who among us didn't say, man, I wish that would have lasted longer? The lunar eclipse is a much longer thing. Let's see here. And unlike a solar eclipse that has a very limited path of totality, the blood moon total lunar eclipse will be visible across the entire U.S., and no special equipment will be necessary to view it. So part of it is because a total lunar eclipse is when the moon gets between the Earth and the sun and does so in such a way that it blocks nearly all the light from the sun from hitting it. And, of course, the Earth is much bigger than the moon, so the Earth casting a shadow on the moon lasts longer than the moon casting a shadow on the Earth. And So it's much longer, it's much bigger, it's much wider. That's why we don't have a specific thin path of totality, and it lasts longer. So anyway, and why is it a blood moon? Well, because there'll be a definite red tinge, I guess. As the light comes past the Earth, it's going through the atmosphere at those edges and getting bent like a prism, and it is the red light that will be hitting the moon, making it appear red. What little light gets through to the moon will make it appear red, hence the blood moon, the total lunar eclipse. So they say, think of the Dark Side of the Moon album cover from Pink Floyd, where you've got the little prism, and it's kind of like the same thing. Light gets bent, and it's the red light that gets through to the moon. Anyway, your little science lesson for this morning. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy skies expected today with a high in the middle 50s. Partly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-30s. Federal job cuts could seriously impact the Buckeye State.
The state of Ohio has over 83,000 federal civilian workers. The Department of Government Efficiency, headed by Elon Musk, aims to drastically reduce the payroll of the federal government, which is the nation's largest employer. Cuts at the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Social Security Administration have already cost Ohioans jobs. Southwest Ohio could be hit the hardest, as the Dayton Daily News reports one of every four federal civilian employees are in Montgomery, Greene, and Miami counties, and Dayton has the highest share of any urban area in the state.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library's 2025 Community Read Selection is a book called Gaining Ground, a story of farmers' markets, local food, and saving the family farm by Forrest Pritchard. Library Director Sarah Clevidence was on with WFIN's Chris Oakes to discuss this year's Community Read Selection.
Forrest decided that he was going to save the family farm. And so this book is his adventures in doing that and learning what it takes to run a farm, you know, kind of bucking the common trends in farming in his community, realizing how he could make it sustainable.
Sarah says Forrest will visit Hancock County on Thursday, March 20th for a public presentation at 7:30 p.m. at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. Community Read is a month-long community event that encourages reading and promotes the benefits of literacy. Get more in this story on our website. The public is invited to the United Way of Hancock County's upcoming annual meeting. It'll be held on Thursday, March 27th at their offices at 318 West Main Cross on the second floor from 5 to 7 p.m. The United Way's annual meeting is open to the public and will celebrate volunteers, donors, and organizations committed to the United Way's mission of measurably improving people's lives in Hancock County. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Now, our cover story this morning, will there be a government shutdown at the end of the week? Could a repeal of the CHIPS Act threaten Intel's investment in Ohio's high-tech economy? Will Congress approve the elimination of the Department of Education? Representative Bob Latta is with us this morning to talk about the overwhelming whirlwind of issues currently swirling around Washington. Congressman, thank you very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it. Let me start with the continuing resolution that the House passed to avoid a government shutdown at the end of the week. It now moves on to the Senate, but it is not exactly a truly clean CR. What do you say to those who accuse House Republicans of playing games by forcing Democrats to accept cuts to what they view as essential programs benefiting families and veterans and so on? Why include cuts in a continuing resolution rather than just continuing funding at current levels?
Well, this is about as clean as you're going to get on this. First of all, fortunately, it did pass the House 217 to 214. We had one Republican vote against it, and one Democrat voted for it. But it's important because on Friday, the government was going to shut down. And for President Trump, this would be a terrible time for a shutdown. So he, expressed to the House and to the Senate that he wanted this continuing resolution passed. And so we, and yesterday morning, Vice President Vance came up to the Hill to meet with the Republican conference and once again express the desire that we did not want to have a shutdown. And when you look at the overall, you know, overall spending is actually, it is actually down a little bit. So that's good because, again, you know, you and I have talked, we're going to pay $1 trillion just to pay interest on the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that we start trying to get our fiscal house in order. And so there's a, you know, a slight plus up to defense and about a $7 to $8 billion down in this overall non-defense. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, in Washington, when people consider a cut is, you know, if a president comes out with a budget, if you're first getting $100 and the president comes out with a budget, say we're going to give you $120, and then Congress gives you $110, they say, well, we got cut. You actually got 10 instead, but people say you got cut. So it's important that we got this done because the other thing is for the president, you know, for to continue on where they've been working, trying to find the waste, fraud, and abuse out there in spending, that we got to get this under control. And, I mean, it's you know, they always talk about that your kids and your grandkids are going to pay for something. You know, the American people right now are. And, you know, I look at the every morning I check to see what the 10-year treasury is because that's what the federal government's borrowing money at. And it's at 4.21% this morning. And the Congressional Budget Office, you go look at what they've been predicting, we'd be in the 3% range. So, you know, when you talk about $36 trillion and add a percent to it, that's a huge amount of money.
Why should Americans, as you said, this is just a continuing resolution. This buys time to get a permanent budget solution in place. But this has been talked about for many, many months now. Why should Americans believe that you'll have a permanent solution done and passed by September, which is the expiration of this latest continuing resolution?
Well, that's a great question because first, Tom Cole, who's the chairman of our Appropriations Committee, and again, this is when you're thinking in the last year, he told us, he said, look, and then you got to remember the Democrats controlled the Senate at the time and also the White House, and we have 12 appropriation bills that need to be passed. And Tom said, he stood up in conference and said, look, I will have all 12 appropriation bills. And we're not going to get a Democrat vote for them because they just want to keep spending money. He said, but I will have all 12 bills here by July the 31st of last year. And he was true to his word. Now, the problem we ran into, we had some Republicans. Again, it's like if I don't get 100% of what I want or maybe 110%, I'm not going to support something. So, you know, this is what they could get out of committee. And he got them to the floor, but we got 5 of the bills done. And we had 5 Republicans vote with the Democrats on one of these, what we call our procedural rules, and they killed the bill. So we couldn't go forward any farther. So, you know, we have to look ourselves in the mirror and say, look, you know, I'm a firm believer what Ronald Reagan said. I'd rather get 80% of something go off the cliff with all flags flying. So we got to take this and get these steps done. But right now, you know, the next big phase coming is what they call the continuing resolution.
Right.
And that is, I'm going to say not the continuing resolution, I'm sorry, on the budget reconciliation. So we got the continuing resolution behind it. So we're done.
Right.
We're done now for this year until the 30th of September.
Yeah.
The budget reconciliation now, which we passed setting are what we call our top numbers. And so like the Energy and Commerce Committee, which I serve on, we have to find extra money. Cuts. We're looking at trying to find $1.5 trillion in cuts. We're talking over, you know, a 10-year period. But is included in there, trying to get it up to $2 trillion. And then, because again, what happens at the end of this year, all of the tax cuts that we implemented back in 2017,
mm-hmm.
which made the economy explode and take off, all of it, you know, we're going to see all of the individuals out there in America are going to pay higher taxes. And if you own, you know, a small business or a farm, the death tax is going to go back to where it was in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And so the exemption levels are going to drop way down. So, you know, in parts of my district, when you see farmland selling for $15,000, $20,000 an acre, you factor in the farm equipment, it can really hurt our farmers out yeah. there and small business owners.
I want to ask about a couple of other items that have been making headlines. Beginning today, reports of massive layoffs at the Department of Education. President Trump has vowed to shut down the Department of Education, but of course, that would actually take an act of Congress. Is that something that you would vote for?
Well, you know, first, here's a question you always have to ask. Does the Department of Education educate anybody? And I'm a firm believer in local and control of your districts, also in the states. They make a much better decision than a one-size-fits-all that comes out of Washington. And, you know, what's being cut, and I've seen with a lot of the areas, but when you're looking at the like Pell Grants and things that are directly helping students out there, they're not looking at that. They're looking at a lot of this other stuff. But, again, I think the American people think, What did the Department of Education do? And I know that Tim Walberg from Michigan, who is the chairman of the Education and Workforce Committee here in Congress, you know, they're looking at trying to pare this thing back. But I've always said, what do they educate would be better to send the money directly to the states? That the states, because every time you have a federal government and going to the state, think about how much money is being taken away as it flows out of here because you got all these people touching it. So, you might have to have some kind of a framework as it goes out. But it's just like over the Department of Energy. How much energy has the Department of Energy produced in this country?
Well,
and it's really making sure that we get things done for America.
You mentioned Pell Grants, and that brings up the question of who takes over the essential functions of the Department of Education if that department is shuttered. Pell Grants, student loans, programs for students with special needs, all of those would still be considered essential. Who handles that?
Well, you know, and right now, you know, we're a long ways from that because, as you said, it took an act of Congress to get there. And, you know, the problem with that is you've got to have 60 votes to clear anything in the Senate. So I wouldn't see that happening soon. But getting the department pared back, I think, is important because, again, you can, instead of, as I said, every time money leaves Washington, there's too many fingers touching it, and so there's a lot less dollars there as once it gets back to the local level.
And so
you're still going to, again, you're still going to have the framework right now in the Department of Education to handle all that.
Real quickly, and only have about 30 seconds here, the president has also floated the idea of repealing the CHIPS Act, which I know you did not vote for when it initially passed, but it was key. State leaders say it was key to landing the Intel investment in central Ohio, which they say is a key to springboarding Ohio into a high-tech economy. Would you be concerned about a repeal of the CHIPS Act and the impact that it may have on that investment and on Ohio's high-tech economic future?
Well, and first, the big reason I didn't vote for that act, they didn't pay for it. that's the other problem we run into. It's great passing things, but it wasn't paid for again and just added to the debt. And unfortunately, as you and I know, Intel is not moving down there in Columbus. Now they're talking it might be 2032 before, because things get pushed back. And but now what we've seen happen on the worldwide market is that there's a glut now of chips. And so there's been a real issue out there on that. So, but, you know, we've got to start paying for things in this country because it's just adding it to that debt is not going to be helpful. And I still can't figure out where we're going to come up with $1 trillion just to pay the interest on that debt. And that's the number two number now. So all these other areas that we're talking about, you'd like to help in different areas around the country. No, you're not, because it's Social Security. Then it's going to be paying the interest on the debt. Then it's going to be defense and Medicare can fall behind there. So, we're going to be at a point in the not too many future years that interest will be the largest payment we make. And so it would be like, well, sorry, folks, You can't have that because we've got to pay the interest on the debt. We owe foreign creditors $8.5 trillion today.
We will leave it there for now. Again, Congressman Bob Latta with us this morning talking about the overwhelming whirlwind of issues that are currently swirling around Washington. And Congressman, thanks very much for taking some time for us
much.
This morning.
Have a great day.
Well, of course, for decades, weight loss has been a multi-billion dollar a year industry. Anything that promises to help Americans fight the battle of the bulge is going to make a lot of money. So it's probably no surprise that these obesity injectables, GLP-1 medications like Ozempic and Wegovy, which are highly effective but also very expensive, are leading to knockoffs. But beware, the Partnership for Safe Medicines has released a new report detailing the unauthorized, illegal, and often dangerous ingredients they contain. Joining us this morning with more on this urgent plea to protect American consumers is Shabir Imber Safdar, Executive Director of the Partnership for Safe Medicines. What are the risks? Kind of lay this out for us. How dangerous is some of this stuff that you're seeing?
Well, what we've seen is three kinds of threats to American patients: straight up lookalike counterfeits, compounded medicine that may have quality issues, and they'll also illegally compounded medicine.
What are the differences and what are the threats that they pose?
Well, one of the things that we just studied and released a report about is that we looked at import records of medicine being shipped into the U.S. that claim to be semaglutide and tirzepatide, the active ingredients in those weight loss injectables. Mm-hmm. And we found products that were being shipped into the country that said that they were made in like a gym in Canada, right? Absolutely unsafe for any human being to take, if that's even true. But if it's not true, still unsafe for a human to take.
Yeah.
And some of these shipments were getting through. And so somewhere in America, there's people who are injecting these random chemicals into their body, which is wildly dangerous. You can kill yourself that way.
Where are these counterfeit medications being sold? As you mentioned and kind of alluded to, we would hope that most of them being stopped at the border before they get into this country. But for those that make it through, where do they end up being sold? Certainly not at the neighborhood pharmacy.
No, we have seen a couple of counterfeits of, you know, Ozempic in bricks and mortar pharmacies, but that's not usually where you see it. You're more likely to win a lottery ticket scratch off in the pharmacy than you are to get a fake drug. What we're seeing is that Americans will buy these either online and get them shipped to them. And when you go online, you're almost certainly going to find yourself a fake pharmacy, not a real one. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to med spas. And the med spas are dispensing medication injectables without usually sufficient medical supervision or a pharmacist involved in the purchasing. Mm. And that's really the danger that Americans get, I would say, defrauded by.
Yeah.
That, you know, even if they think they're staying within the U.S., they're finding themselves endangered by people dispensing medicine that shouldn't be.
Is it fair to say that one of the challenges to addressing this problem is the fact that there are, in fact, reputable online pharmacies, there are reputable med spas? These are not, I mean, it's not an indictment of an entire category of business necessarily.
Well, when you look at the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy studies, they do them every year, of online pharmacy crime, you'll find for every 100 pharmacies that they sample, only 4 of them are legit. Mm. The rest are unlicensed and operating entirely outside any regulatory supervision. So I just recommend that people don't.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, for example, my healthcare insurance, they have an option to order a 90-day supply of medicine through their, you know, online and have it delivered to you. You're not saying that those are dangerous?
No, those aren't questionable. But what happens is sometimes people will go onto these telehealth platforms.
Gotcha.
And they'll order medicine and they'll get some compounded medicine. And Americans don't realize that that's not even FDA approved. I mean, yes, it's been compounded in the U.S. usually by a licensed pharmacy. But, you know, the safety rigor on those products is not as high as it is on something that was made by, let's say, Lilly or Novo Nordisk.
Which actually brings up one of the other complicating factors to all of this. For a time, the FDA was permitting generic and compounded versions of these medications to be sold because they were in short supply. Did that kind of open the door to these more dangerous fakes going, I guess, more mainstream, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, well, it allowed compounding pharmacies, which are usually involved in making some critical short supply medicines, to basically make these blockbuster drugs that everybody wanted access to, for a lot cheaper. And mixed in with all of that, it became very, very difficult to tell them from the outright criminals. And an added problem is that even when a compounding pharmacy makes that medicine, it doesn't have the same safety profile. So even if it's a legitimate, legal, licensed compounding pharmacy, the FDA still considers that medicine unapproved and will tell consumers only to use it as a last resort. They would discourage you starting treatment on it unless it was like an oncology drug that was in shortage and you needed to do your cancer treatment. They would never recommend that you start on a weight loss program with a compounded medicine. It's supposed to be last resort, and that's because it's not as safe.
Yeah. So as you were mentioning a little bit earlier, these are, you know, in some cases making it across the border, being shipped into the U.S. From where? Where are they coming from? And how are they getting here? Why can't the government just shut down these illegal and dangerous operations?
So it's been a multi-decade battle with smugglers that we have endured, and the volume of product coming into the country is just so great that it's really, really hard for them to catch them all. In our study, they basically caught 1 in 5 packages that we were really worried about that were on their face clearly a problem. But most of them came from China and India, with some from Bangladesh as a second one, and some from Canada. And what we found was that when we examined the manifest, the shipping manifest of many of these suspicious packages, they should have been refused based upon the manifest themselves. For example, we looked at the shipping manifest for semaglutide that was sent and said that semaglutide was manufactured and the address is a girls' public school in Canada. Right? There's no, and I'll tell you, I checked, there's no FDA registered facility for that school in Canada. Yeah. All the ones in China that we examined, that address does not match a facility that the FDA knows about and inspects. So I think Americans think, oh, you know, a lot of our medicine comes from China. Well, it does, but it comes from FDA inspected facilities in China. And that's not the only thing in China. There's a lot of uninspected facilities that people use to and then smuggle stuff into the U.S. from.
So how do we know? I mean, are there warning signs that a weight loss drug may be illegally imported or unsafe?
Well, so as an American patient trying to stay safe, the first thing you should do is make sure that you don't go online and buy a product based upon your judgment of the online pharmacy, right? If your healthcare provider tells you use this online pharmacy, it's going to be safe. Or if you go to a bricks and mortar pharmacy in your neighborhood, that's going to be safe. But you should not go online and try and find it. The second thing you shouldn't do is you should not, if you can help it, go to one of these computer doctors, these telehealth companies, or to a med spa, right, to get medicine. That is not sufficient medical supervision for what's a pretty serious medical prescription drug that you're going to start taking. You should go to your normal doctor and you should have them monitor you. A doctor that sees you physically, you know, every week and has a long talk and knows your medical history, that's going to be the best person to start treatment on. And maybe after you're stable, you would drop back. But you need to be seeing a doctor on a regular basis to supervise it. And then the last thing is, I would say, be super careful about compounded medications. They're not the same thing. They're not generics. And they're not the same equivalent switch out as a branded medication. They have a lower safety profile.
Yeah. And again, to reemphasize the point, it's one thing for a weight loss product of any kind to be ineffective. Frankly, there are an awful lot of those ineffective products on the market, probably always will be out there. But what we're talking about here are products that are actually dangerous.
Indeed. If you don't know what's in it, if it hasn't been through heavy safety inspections like a branded product, or a generic product, it's not safe.
Again, Shabir Imber Safdar is Executive Director of the Partnership for Safe Medicines. Where do we get more information on this report that we reference?
You can look at our website. It's safemedicines.org on the web. We're also on all of the major social media platforms, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Shabir, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Have you heard about this story? This has been making headlines the past couple of days. They've been talking about this story. The four-year-old boy in Wisconsin, Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, who called 911 to tell them that his mom needed to go to jail. You know, the four-year-old called 911 because his mom was being bad and needed to go to jail. Upon arriving at the home to investigate, officers found out that mom's sin was eating her son's ice cream. She had eaten all of the ice cream, and the kid was not happy about it. Once he saw that police had actually arrived, the boy stated that he no longer wanted his mom to go to jail, and he just wanted some ice cream. That was what he... Once the police officers were able to verify that the ice cream situation was the real and only reason that the child called, that there was no real danger involved, the officers left the home, only to return the next day and surprise the boy with some ice cream and, of course, a lecture on the proper use of 911. Hopefully, the story here said, hopefully the next time this kid wants some ice cream, he'll try a less rocky road to get it. Ba-dum-bum. So. But it was all kinds of cute. Mom needs to go to jail. She's been bad. Ate all the ice cream. Let's see. What else is going on? The broken news. Major League Baseball's Texas Rangers make the broken news. Now, this is a little unusual for a corporate entity to make the broken news, but in this case, I think it's appropriate. Some hats designed for the Rangers are now under review, the team says, after unintentionally using some inappropriate slang. Here's the deal. The Overlap 5950 collection from New Era featured a baseball cap where the T replaced the X in Texas. Okay, the team's T logo replaced the X in Texas. The problem is that the resulting word is a Spanish vulgarity which translates to a certain part of the female anatomy. Let's just put it that way. It's a Spanish vulgarity when you replace the X with another T. Story goes on to say the hat is no longer for sale. Major League Baseball has yet to comment as of yesterday afternoon. made a big oops there on that one, yeah. New baseball season not off to a roaring start for the Texas Rangers. Speaking of the Lone Star State, a funeral home worker in Texas is in trouble with the law, accused of abusing a corpse. Amber Laudermilk worked as an embalmer. Police say she used a scalpel to stab and castrate the body of a man who was on the state's sex offender database. She castrated the body of the man who was on the sex offender database. Court records show the alleged mutilation happened in front of an embalming student at Memorial Mortuary and Crematory in Houston. She is charged with abuse of a corpse, which is a felony in the state of Texas. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what she was trying to accomplish. I understand the sentiment, but he's dead. That's a problem that's been taken care of. He's not with us anymore. Don't think he's going to be offending again anytime soon. So weird. from the state of New Hampshire. This morning, a 35-year-old man is facing charges, including indecent exposure, lewdness, and reckless conduct. Police in Somersworth, New Hampshire, said Sean Wiener, I'm not making it up, that's his name, Sean Wiener, crashed a stolen vehicle that he was driving in Dover on Sunday afternoon. Following the crash, then he took off his clothes and ran naked through traffic on Route 16. Why he stripped before he was running naked in traffic, I don't know. But he is scheduled to appear in Dover District Court here coming up in several weeks, and maybe we'll get an explanation. But probably not. Maybe it was one of those things that Mr. Wiener woke up one morning and asked himself, how can I get in the most trouble possible in one 24-hour period? Stole a car, running naked through traffic. Did a pretty good job of it. How about this from the international file? This would be a nightmare on your next flight. An Air India flight from Chicago to Delhi. That's a long flight. Had to turn around after 8 of its 12 toilets on board the airplane became clogged 5 hours into the trip. Employees discovered passengers had flushed plastic bags, rags, and even clothing down the toilets. Now, why you would flush your clothing down the toilet of an airplane, I have no idea, but that's apparently what happened. 8 of the 12 toilets became clogged, and that's a long flight to, you know, be low on toilets. What I have for that. Can you imagine flying from Chicago to New Delhi and having to, you know, hold it that high the entire time? Yeah, they figured that wouldn't be possible. So a spokesperson for the airline urged flyers to use lavatories only for the purposes they are intended for. Passengers had to be given hotel accommodations and alternative flight options for their inconvenience.
Wow.
That would be bad. That would be very bad. Wonder they had to land. I mean, if it's like a 2 hour flight and the toilet is clogged, that's one thing. It's like a 12-hour flight. Yeah, that's not good. And lastly, in the broken news this morning, story to put a smile on your face. I love this. It's pretty amazing. Police in Massachusetts say they have recovered a dirt bike that was stolen 25 years ago. In fact, multiple stolen dirt bikes were recovered by the Worcester police in Massachusetts last week, and one turned out had been stolen a quarter century ago. The original owner was tracked down and located with the help of nearby Dedham police. I hope I have that name, name of the department correct, the name of the town. The dirt bike actually was returned to the man 25 years after the fact. And the owner said some of the specialized parts that he had added to the bike were actually still there when he got it back. So that is pretty cool. I mean, you figure something like that is stolen and it's gone forever, but they were able to get it back to him 25 years later. never give up on a case is the moral of the story there. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When local news breaks, you can hear about it on social media at lightning speed. And while getting you the information fast is important, WFIN will always present the story only after verifying with actual sourced facts. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust the voice that's been covering the news in Findlay and Hancock County for more than 80 years. You can depend on us to get the story right every time. On social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Really interesting poll of 1,000 patients who are taking weight loss medications, which have been all those, you know, Ozempic and Wegovy and all of those GLP-1s lose weight. In this survey, 20% of these patients on these weight loss medications, 20% report that an ex has reached out to reconnect after they lost weight. About half of those in the survey reported an increase in confidence since taking the medications, and one third said that their sex drive increased. On the flip side, one in four have received more unsolicited messages, and 10% say that their spouse or significant other has become jealous or insecure since they shed pounds. Kind of interesting side effects, maybe unexpected side effects from some of these amazing weight loss drugs that are all the rage these days. The Spring Sausage Sale to benefit the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce Agribusiness Committee Scholarship Fund is now underway. Doug Jenkins is here from the Chamber, the Agribusiness Committee. To tell us more about it, this is always a big fundraiser.
Oh, yeah.
And so folks can make their place their orders now.
Absolutely. So we opened up. You can buy it online at the Chamber of Commerce website.
That's the easiest way.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Go on there, order it. You'll get your receipt and everything, and, and you're set to go. Pickup is April 12th, and you can order through April 2nd. It's locally sourced whole hog sausage. It's the best.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Herdwell is sourcing it this year.
Yeah, Herdwell helps us do with the packaging and everything, too. So, it's, you know, you're supporting local all the way through when you take part in this. But the best part is, you know, it rolls into scholarships for area kids going into an ag-related field. I just looked at the number. It's almost $100,000 in scholarships given away.
Wow.
Over the last, since 1995, I think.
So talk a little bit about, I was going to ask you to talk a little bit about the scholarship fund itself. This is for students who are pursuing really any ag-related career, right?
Yeah, I mean, it can really be anything ag-related. We've done, we've had a kid who went to UNOH for diesel mechanics, wanted to work on farm machinery when he got done. So yeah. We thought, well, that's a great idea. We've had kids going into food sciences and agronomy and you know, just really everything in between. I think some have wanted to go into ag journalism. Certainly support that. Yeah. And so it's interesting to see the different ways that kids are going into what's a huge industry for Hancock County. Well,
and how many times have we talked about the fact that there are so many in agriculture today? I mean, it's not just farming. It's not, you know, obviously, you know, farming is still very important, but that is certainly far from the only way.
Yeah.
That you can have a career in the agriculture field.
Well, I think a lot of people, if they go into an ag-related field like that, they're also farming. Like, they might be working
in many
out
cases,
yeah, legacy and you know, doing the agronomy out there and everything, but also working their fields in their spare time too. I think a lot of times that's what you see. So it's an all-encompassing thing.
And again, agriculture is the top industry for everything else that we've got going on in this community. We talk about top micropolitan area. Once again, 11th year in a row, and we've got all this growth and everything. We see the expansion and the growth in the community. But at the heart of it, the end of the day, agriculture is still the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the best part about that mix is that it gives everybody just more opportunities, whether it's in the city here or it's through your farming. We've got legacy that's, you know, really good at helping our farmers find good market opportunities, things like that. It just it really plays well together.
And we talk about all the ways agriculture industry is changed and grown and expanded and, you know, different than maybe what it was a generation or two or three ago. You have a number of people who do other things and farm.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. I mean, it may talk about agriculture careers, but they might be doing other things completely outside of agriculture and farming.
100%. I mean, there are, I guarantee you, people working at Marathon who also farm on the side, or they work at Goodyear and Cooper and do farming on the side, of the University of Findlay, and farm on the side. That's, my father-in-law is a farmer, but he worked for years in the Air Reserve over on the Mansfield. For that was his career, and also farmed
and
on the
also
side.
Farming, So, and that leads us to the Agribusiness Committee of the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce. What is it that the Agribusiness Committee is, what's the mission, what's the purpose?
So the mission is twofold. One is to raise money for these scholarships, and two is just to promote agriculture education and just agriculture in general in the community. Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing that we do is the scholarships for the area kids, which we do through, we raise money through the sausage sale, like we're talking about, but also through some scholarship sponsorships that we do as well. And we have the Farmer Share Breakfasts in June every year over on the fairgrounds. So that helps raise money for that. But then whatever money is left over after we get the Farmer Share paid for and scholarships done, generally we're donating to a lot of times it'll go to the Historical Museum for their agriculture display there. Mm-hmm. So they have a very distinctive agriculture display there. The OSU Extension Office's Ag Hall of Fame, the Hancock County Ag Hall of Fame, is actually hosted there. Mm-hmm. So we've given to that in the past. So there's just all sorts of different ways to highlight the things that agriculture does for the community.
And it certainly makes sense, again, given that this is the main economic driver in Hancock County, that the chamber would have an agribusiness committee.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, you have to be very cognizant of that, too. When you talk with those individuals who are part of the agribusiness committee, this is certainly difficult. And we were talking about it just yesterday with Ed Lentz, all of the uncertainty, all of the factors that are kind of poking the bear with respect to agriculture these days.
Yeah. And I guess it's probably nothing different for farmers. It always feels like there's always something and some external factor that's out of your control. And Ed's actually a part of our committee as well. When you talk to them about it, like, there's a sense of, all right, let's see how this is going to play out, and mm-hmm. these are the things that we
maybe
need to be proactive about.
Maybe a little frustration in that. I mean, you talk about the things that are out of your control, and again, we were talking about this yesterday. There are always things that are out of your control, especially in agriculture, but you know, some of the things like still no farm bill, you know, the trade war that is looming. These are things that should be in your control, within our control.
You should at least be able to talk to someone and talk to your elected officials about it. And I think that's one thing that we're able to do as part of the Ag Committee, since it's part of the chamber. And one of the things that we do through the chamber are legislative roundtables, and mm-hmm. you know, we're able to talk to elected officials, bring them here, and hey, let's talk about these are the issues that are impacting the area business community. And you can't talk about issues impacting the area business community without talking about agriculture.
Right.
So being able to make sure that at least someone from the ag industry, usually they're on our committee because they're pretty involved anyway, are at that table when we have those roundtables is really key. So we had this quarter, we had Rob McCauley. So that's more on the state side, and you work to get Bob Latta to come in, things like that.
You look at, I mean, with the uncertainty of the federal level, that requires even more certainty at the state level.
Most definitely it does. The good news with this big is agriculture is in Ohio alone. Like, there's more pressure to be put upon elected officials by the ag industry.
Recognizing.
At least in the state. And then we can figure out what to do at the federal level with some
recognizing
of those
that they may kind of be the anchor in all of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So really fascinating stuff. It is an interesting time in the world of agriculture, I'm sure. Again, the sausage sale benefit the Agribusiness Committee Scholarship Fund is underway now. Once again, mention how we can place those orders and give us all of the details.
Yeah, so the easiest way to do it is just to go to the Chamber of Commerce website. It's findlayhancockchamber.com. There's a drop-down menu in the store, and then you just buy it right through the store there.
Okay.
Pickup will be on April 12th. That'll be out at the Legacy Country Corner store. We're actually going to be doing a ribbon cutting out there that morning, too, because they rebranded the store and doing a few things different out there. And it's great. So West Ohio Food Bank helps us with the refrigerated truck out there. They brought out they had like speakers and everything, so it's a party. We're grilling up there. Legacy does their customer appreciation, so we're grilling up sausage sandwiches for people there too. And then you pick up your sausage and you can go home and make your own sausage sandwiches with delicious locally sourced
whole hog. It is delicious. I know my wife just placed her order, so we're ready to go. And again, the deadline to order is
April 2nd.
Okay, so circle that on your calendar. Go out there and do that today. We have the link on our webpage, too, by the way,
at
goodmornings.net. Once again, Doug Jenkins with the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce Agribusiness Committee. with us this morning. Doug, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, exactly 5 years since COVID-19 was declared a national emergency, what lessons have and have not been learned from the pandemic response? A conversation with the author of COVID Wars, America's Struggle Over Public Health and Personal Freedom. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.